John the Baptist told the truth, forcefully, often sharply. He told the truth to the people of Jerusalem, including the soldiers, the Roman soldiers of the occupying army and the tax gatherers. And they seem to have found this a refreshing, if bracing, experience, because we're told that they came in their hundreds to hear him. He told the truth to King Herod Antipas. And we're told, interestingly, that Herod also liked to listen to him. He recognized both a man who told the truth, and he recognized his need of the truth. The one person who really could not abide the truth was Herod's wife, Herodias. And she engineers John's death, so he quite literally loses his head for the sake of truth. This great truth-teller, then, what does he have to say to our post-truth world? I call it a post-truth world with some hesitation, because I don't think it is entirely a post-truth world. It is a world in which there are competing narratives, surely. Among the features of our world is that once upon a time you found out about what was going on in the world by reading long-established newspapers. They might be various degrees of brow, from low to middle to high, but they all checked their facts and employed people to do it. Or you heard it on radio or television stations, where similarly there was a concern to get facts right. Of course, the web and social media have changed all that. You can put all sorts of stories out there and nobody checks them. And in response to that, even the serious organisations have had to cut down very considerably on the amount of fact-checking they do. So there's a sense in which, yes, there are competing truths out there that help to make it a post-truth world. But what I find fascinating, unsettling, but fascinating, is the way in which we live, particularly in a political discourse, that is indifferent to truth. It recognises that there probably are things that are the case, but politicians have discovered that so long as they get people, they tell people things that people would like to be the case, those people will vote for them, even if they probably in their heart of hearts know that they're being told things that are not, in the ordinary sense of the word, true. That's really, really interesting. I'm very interested by the defence that's been made by some prominent Brexiteers to it being pointed out. It was pointed out at the time, it's been pointed out forcibly since, that certain claims were made in the course of that campaign that are not in the ordinary sense of the word true, or are very, very unlikely to be true. For example, the claim that Turkey was about to join the European Union, and therefore all those millions of Turks would come flooding into this country. That was said. People contested it at the time. And when challenged subsequently, people have said, prominent people have said, yes, of course we knew that wasn't going to happen, but we also knew that people knew that that wasn't going to happen. In other words, we're all colluding in a world that is indifferent to truth. This is quite different from Winston Churchill's famous aphorism that truth is so precious that she must always be escorted by a bodyguard of lies. We were reminded of that recently because of the D-Day celebrations, and it was apropos of the great D-Day deception that he said it. There's an acknowledgement there that there is such a thing as truth, and the truth really, really, really matters, and that's why you have to surround it with this escort of lies. Now, I'm talking about something else. A public rhetoric, a political rhetoric, that is indifferent to truth. Doesn't matter what things are the case and what things are not the case. You can say what you like if they work in electoral terms. And the people are happy to go along with that because look at how they cast their votes. What would John the Baptist, that great truth teller, say in the face of that phenomenon? I've got a pretty clear idea of what he would say. I need to make three observations about it. The first two are my own. The third is definitely John the Baptist, though I agree with him. But they're all my three observations are about the way in which an indifference to truth in public discourse will bump up in three ways against things that simply and inescapably are the case. You can postpone the moment of encounter with reality as long as you can get away with, but in the end, you will bump up against things that are the case in the real world, or what we might call facts. There are political facts that a discourse indifferent to truth will bump up against. Now, political facts are the hardest to discern, because often you don't discover that they're facts until later on down the line. You realise retrospectively. But you can have a pretty good stab at identifying some political facts that discourses bump up against. For example, we have had a whole lot of would-be contenders for the leadership of the Conservative Party all going around saying, well, I'm going to be able to negotiate a new and better deal with the European Union. And the two that are remaining in the ring are going around saying that very sort of thing. Now, it is surely inescapably and ineluctably the case in the real world that the EU is not going to negotiate a new political arrangement, a new deal. And there's a reason why the European Union isn't going to do it, and that's because the kind of deal that is wanted is one that subverts a fundamental principle on which the European Union understands itself to be functioning. And you have to ask yourself, you know, namely the freedom of movement, freedom of the market, the single market, you have to ask yourself, is it likely that the EU would completely recast its fundamental character to meet the demand of a nation that is leaving the European Union? It's just not very probable. And so our two leadership contenders are going to bump up, I think, against what seems to me to be a political fact.